Lewis, of course, on piano, with When the Spirit Moves You. It's from an album titled Best Of, and it is the best of Ramsey Lewis by his own definition over the years, and demonstrating the depth and breadth of his musical talents and styles. L.D. Young on bass, Red Holt on drums, and with Ramsey Lewis comprised the Ramsey Lewis Trio. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we've got a lot to talk about, so let's not waste too much time. As you know, that interesting the circus delivered yesterday its third and next to last edition. That's a Democratic National Committee with the so-called debates. As you know, we call them here Q&A sessions, question and answer sessions, because in these debates, which are so crowded, you don't have the luxury of actually following what you expect to be the debate rules, that people ask questions and answer questions of each other. And that's where the sparks fly. That's where the magic happens. And this is the third debate where this did not happen, but still interesting. We have to keep in mind also about the Bahamas. Chaos is understandably the order of the day in the Bahamas. There's massive damage and dislocation and confusion, and the lack of clarity as to who is to be doing what. And these things happen. It's not like they're doing this to spite anybody. It is just that with the hurricane Dorian, so much has gone wrong, so much. And it's all happening at the same time. You have people who are dislocated, who can't find their families, others who are dead and left to decompose in the open sun. People can't get to them. It is a real tragedy. I've talked to people about, who are interested in donating. Right now, the best thing to do is to wait and let the people who are in charge get a handle on organization of effort, and they will tell the public what is the best thing to do. And hopefully they'll have more information than that. But the main thing is to just stay ready to do what we can, but it would not make sense. I mean, you send money, but where is it going? And how are we to be assured that it is going to the people who are intended to receive it? So it's not too long before there will be that kind of order established, but please don't underestimate the calamity that these folks have found themselves in. And without the proper equipment to respond and so forth, have a little patience. It seems almost terrible to suggest something like that, but give the folks on the ground a chance to organize themselves as best they can, and not create even more turmoil and calamity by just entering the fray in an unorganized fashion. Let them handle it the best that they can on the ground, and they will be the ones to send the signals, and we have to wait for these signals, I think, is the best way to go. Because even if you sent money, even if you sent clothing and whatever, where is it going to be stored? The people don't have places to live. They don't have space to live in many places. It's all underwater. So just be a bit patient, a bit more patient, I should say. Your heart is in the right place, and we will soon be able to be far more efficient in the way that we can help. Just be a little bit more patient. It seems as if the most important things that they need, things like water and some food supplies, are getting through. But of course, it is a far cry from the way only a week ago, a far cry from the way they were living. So they are going through their period of adjustment, trying to locate family members that have not been located yet or still missing. There's a lot of logistical work that has to go on that they are not able to fully implement because they don't have equipment. I mean, that was not their lifestyle. So in order to do this work and the magnitude that it is, it literally is about setting up things from scratch, which will take time. We don't need to compound it by making it more stressful for the people who are already there and trying to set up an infrastructure to make the rescue effort far more efficient. So please be a bit patient and know that they know that people outside of the Bahamas are wanting to help. And that is a great comfort to them, to know that people want to help. In the meantime, some people are saying that one of the good ways to help is to pay a visit, not to the Bahamas that's underwater, but of course, you know, it consists of many islands. They're asking people, especially those who have already booked, even before the storm, please don't break your passage and come through and spend some time and some money. That is one way of helping. And we will be told, and that's what we must have, the patience and the humility to wait just a little bit longer so that we can be properly guided by the people on the ground. Okay. Of course, you know the issue of President Mugabe's death, which turned out to be quite a tactical problem in Zimbabwe, but just the same, hundreds of thousands of people have turned out to pay their respects. And this is what the wider world does not understand. We are supposed to know of Robert Mugabe as a tyrant, and he probably was, you know, in his later years. I think he even had to concede that his ways of doing things were antithetical to the way things started out. When the country became independent and the enthusiasm and the optimism that people were feeling. And then, of course, after almost 40 years in rule, we saw cracks in the structure. But that does not, as the people are saying, that is not a reason to dismiss him and the role he played, not just in Zimbabwe, but in the African world and in the developing world. So that is the beauty, I think, of being thoughtful in evaluating a person's importance. You can see where they went wrong, but you can also see when they made the best effort possible to be right. and to do right. And as I said, hundreds of thousands of people are turning out. And there was a discussion and a slight debacle over where exactly is he to be buried. Is he to be buried in the National Heroes Acre, or is he to be buried in his village, which is what he always wanted? He wanted to be buried in his village. That has not been resolved yet, but we wait to see what the elders are going to say, what the people are going to say, and what the government is going to say, and how they're going to resolve this. It's a major issue because it speaks about ancestral ties and cultural ties and old frictions that have not healed. So we wait to see. But in the meantime, if you listen to some of the Western media's coverage, you get the sense that nobody loved him, that everybody thought the same way as they do. But you can see the testimonials and the number of people who have just wanted to show up and pay their respects. He was so respected in his country, and so it belies the other narrative. And I always say that there's a need to pay attention to the people's thinking. What are they thinking? Their former president is dead. They remember him very differently from the narratives that we are told. And they don't care about what people think at this point. They care only that as a nation, the nation shouldn't act in an ungracious way. And even if the current government wishes to do so, and it says it does not want to do it, they wish to carry out the customary respect to a leader, especially a senior leader, a man in his 90s, his mid-90s. So we have that going. And, of course, we have the famous debate. As you know, we call it the Q&A sessions. And it turns out it's the perfect thing to call these show-and-tell programs that they call a debate. That happened last night. Maybe you may want to tell us your interpretation of what happened. And in the meantime, on a parallel track, we have some Democrats moving closer and closer to impeaching the president. So we'll see what the reaction is. 888-874-4888. It's Free Your Mind Friday. So, Harvey from Berkeley, free your mind.
Hello again, wonderful Utrice.
Hey, Harvey, how are you doing?
Very good. Well, this last Monday, the California State Assembly passed a bill called SB 206 with a unanimous vote to institute payment for college athletes in California. The bill is called Fair Pay for Play. And I'm sure that I'm not the first person to come up with this idea, but it's my belief that it's time to create a better learning environment for all college and university students, and by paying them a living wage for the time that they spend learning and mastering the subjects of their choice. Because of the current high cost of college and university education, which doesn't include housing, transportation, and food, a vast number of today's students, especially from low-income and middle-income families, have to take out these predatory loans, which create a lot of undue stress and rob the students of the joy of learning. These lending institutions like banks and financial companies make sure that students can't declare bankruptcy, and recently Betty DeVos said that there would be no student loan forgiveness. At the same time, we give over half of our gross national income product to the military-industrial complex and various agencies like social services, nutritional programs, healthcare, and education have to fight over scraps from the table. And many students in California have applied for food stamps, because with the high cost of education and housing, there's not enough money left over for food. So it would serve our nation as well as serve our nation well if we were to pay college and university students a living wage for the task of learning their often difficult subjects. And these hardworking students, many from low-income families, could bring us medical cures as well as use their talents to develop renewable energy to help slow our current climate catastrophe. And if they were to, if they were subsidized with a guaranteed living wage, that would make education available to all bright American students, irregardless of their race, religion, or income status. So I'm calling for a living wage for students, for college and university students across America.
I would endorse that, and I would add to it that the United States should consider it a major insult that just about everything that people would regard as necessary, everything is commodified. Everything has a price tag to it. No other major nation, and even minor nations, for that matter, has this practice of putting a bill. You want to go to school? Here's what it would cost you. When we see so much waste, we see so much corruption, we see so many ways in which the privileged and the rich can get whatever they want for free. And everybody just trying to better themselves in order to contribute to society, they've got to fork over the dough. And it is, to me, a great tragedy and an insult, really, to the so-called values people have about important things in life that we can all benefit from. Why the insistence that education should be a paid benefit? I don't get that at all. Thanks, Harvey, for calling in.
Thank you.
888-874-4888. Mahat, you are on the air.
Yes, greetings to the beloved family.
Thank you.
I heard a headline on Free Speech TV, Democracy Now!, about a 12-year-old girl from the Bahamas that was with her, coming into the United States with her godmother, and now is in a facility for unaccompanied minors. Now, we're truly seeing things going down the toilet, because the first of all, Miami was like a sister city. Before the storm, they used to be able to travel without a visa. So this guy Trump coming up with, well, there's people that are in the Bahamas that not supposed to be in the Bahamas, as if they were using the storm as some cover. So he's demanding documents even as they got on the ferry, and you know that the ferry people apologized because they were told, you know, to pull back. I mean, you can look at the devastation and you could see that whatever document they would have, they couldn't have in the circumstance after the storm. And my last point is what happened in the Supreme Court Wednesday, whereas five of the members of the Supreme Court actually had no regard for what the U.S. and international asylum law is, so that they imposed upon Mexico, that doesn't have the infrastructure or the capacity, and of course the war on drugs causes a lot of corruption there, and they're supposed to take all asylum seekers now, which just makes no sense. So I tell you, one has to keep one's energy up and one's positivity up, because otherwise you would just sink right in with all of this.
No, but the other part of it is any sanely run country. They don't wait until a massive storm like this in order to figure out how to deal with it. This should be standard operating procedure. Maybe it wouldn't happen for the entire term that Donald Trump is in office. That doesn't mean you shouldn't have a working plan as to how, if something like this were to happen, what are the things that need to be considered? That is part of the job. You're supposed to have working plans for major disasters. You pray that they never happen, but if they do happen, you're ready. Every other country that you could look at, Japan routinely goes through practice sessions, just in case you have a major earthquake, just in case you have a major explosion. They do that all the time. This is part of what they train for, how you handle certain things. So the United States doesn't seem to be very good at looking at the possibility of disaster. They wait till disaster happens and then all hell breaks loose because nobody knows what to do, including the people who are the leaders of responses, you know, the response team. Okay. But we need to have more competent leadership. This is very important. And this is why, on a community level, leadership needs to be exerted. What is the evacuation plan for Harlem? What is it? Does the average person living in Bedford-Stuyvesant or in Canarsie, do they know what to do? How to prepare for a disaster? What are the things that you ought to have in place? These are the things that sensible nations routinely do. They all have some kind of a plan, and if it needs to be amended at the time of a disaster, they'll try and amend it. But to have no plan. Look at what happened in Louisiana, the flooding. Do you think it's the first time Louisiana flooded? In New Orleans and in neighboring communities? And how long it took? There were people, there were corpses left to rot for months. And nobody knew what to do. This is modern day America, folks. You know, in New York City, any disaster, it doesn't have to be a major disaster. It just has to be a standard issue disaster. The people don't know what to do. And the people who want to help them themselves barely know what to do. It's very sad and very disappointing that a nation this advanced still is in the Stone Age in terms of thinking about, you know, when disaster strikes, the one thing you really want to have a head start on is where you're moving the people. What services can they get at area A or area B? How do they get there? How do you organize? In a compact city like New York, everybody in New York ought to know what to do. Some basics. Every time that we've had a major issue, it's because people don't know what to do. I mean, even the simplest things, what to do, where to go. It still is that way. But you make a point, a very good point.
Yes, and just let me respond to that, Eutrice, in that it makes me think of philosophy professor Jason Stanley. I think he says it all where we are, how fascism works, the politics of us and them. I hope you'll look into that, maybe bring them on air. Thank you. Love you.
Thanks so much. Thanks for your call. 888-874-4888. So I see the famous debate didn't actually resonate with that many people. I was one of them. You know, I watched this and I said, oh, to have to go through another one of these things is painful. Because we are watching a show that has nothing to do with what we, the information we need, the information we want, the information that is relevant to our lives. But one thing I thought was interesting was how Kamala Harris came across. Almost tipsy. I couldn't understand her demeanor. I couldn't understand, you know, it was kind of like it was a joke. As if she had just come out of a bar somewhere and tried to get it together and thought that she would be a comedian of the moment. What a bizarre way to convey yourself at a time like that. You know, she just thought she was being the stand-up comedian of the night. Very sad to see. All right, let's take a break and come back to the discussion right after that. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Free Your Mind Friday. This is when we, as the title suggests, we free our minds of issues that we wanted to talk about, but they weren't scheduled, or we didn't have them, or you have an idea that they could provoke further discussion and debate, and you just want to give us a taste of where you're going with your thoughts about it. However it works, this is the idea that the airwaves belong to you too. You know, they belong to all of us, and we should use them appropriately and judiciously to accomplish exactly that mission, to talk to each other, to exchange opinions and ideas with each other. And this way, we're accomplishing a long-desired mission of bringing people closer together and forming community. Jose from Rosedale, you're on the air.
Greetings, my professor. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Not bad. two quick things here. I just signed on into the classroom. And I heard the tail end of a discussion on the disaster preparedness in the United States and how these folks don't know what they're doing and they can't seem to get things right.
Yes.
Is that where the conversation was heading?
Well, it was an observation I made.
Well, in my humble opinion, as an elder that's been around for quite a while, I, in my humble opinion, I want to think that But I want to disagree with you on that matter.
Okay.
It's not that these folks don't know what they're doing. I think they know perfectly well what they're doing. And if you notice, when we have these disasters, it's not the rich folks that suffer. I don't see any rich folks out there in the floodwaters of New Orleans and any of these hurricanes and rioting and trying to steal a loaf of bread or something of this, you know, because folks are always accused of stealing this and stealing that, right? But when certain people do these things, they discover a loaf of bread and all this type of stuff. But as I said, I don't see any of them struggling out there and fighting for survival. They are secured. They know exactly what they're going to do, where they're going to go. And the problem is, they profit from all of these disasters. No matter, I think sometimes they sit back and wait for these disasters to happen. Because their friends, their contractors, and all the folks associated with the government officials and the rich and the powerful, they are the ones who benefit from the largesse of these so-called redevelopment program that's supposed to redevelop the communities of the poor and so on and so forth. So they know perfectly well what they are doing. This is not by happenstance or by accident or you're just stumbling around. No, they... Trust me, they know exactly what they're doing. They benefit from what's happening in Puerto Rico. All of in the Caribbean, when we have disasters, it's not the poor that benefit from the so-called rebuilding process. It's those in control who know how the distribution, what comes in, and the funds and the money from the World Bank and whatever that's designed to help develop the community. It winds up finding itself in the pocketbooks of these rascals in their private bank accounts and all these things. So they know exactly what they're doing. So that I beg to disagree with you on that. The other thing is this. I listened a little bit last night to that vaudeville show. And I just caught a little piece of it where the person that's doing the interviewing. I think he's of Latin background, he's a Spanish person. And he asked about, I think it was Bernie Sanders, he asked a question, I believe, where he wanted to know if the socialist agenda that they have is similar to what is there in Venezuela and Cuba and so on and so forth. And it irks me to no end. I said it to you in some classroom a while back, right? That there is a thing there that we don't discuss the different systems of government, ideological systems that is out there, right? And when you mention socialism and so forth, it just gets people all crazy. The American folks just get all crazy. Nobody is prepared to sit and really examine these systems and to let us see the drawbacks and the flaws of these different systems. I want to tell folks that this system that we live under, capitalism, if they didn't have the means of discovering this country, robbing this country, plundering it and taking it away from its rightful owners, and then have the ability to go to the African continent and take Africans from there and brought them to the new world, worked them to death to create untold wealth for this country, if they didn't have the right to the power to go all over the world and conquer other places and rob and plunder their natural resources and bring it back to this country, to develop this country into probably the most powerful economy on the face of this earth. If there are other powers that had the means of putting up embargoes against this country and prevented them from trading and to go all over the world and to rob and plunder other people's resources, and they were contained in the United States without the ability to bring our ancestors to this country and do all these things to acquire these wealth. And no one is looking at the system of how brutal it was, how they have exploited workers, the working class, they exploited everybody. And now they want to judge this against another system that never had the opportunity to come to fruition, because the system of capitalism has used every means available to them to destroy these other systems and not giving them the right to say, this is what we
want. I get the passion that you're speaking with. I'm going to ask you a simple question.
Mm-hmm.
So now what?
Bayfront?
So now what?
So now what?
So
now we have to challenge the system and stop being afraid. Because every time we step forth to come with a system or some means of helping ourselves to lift ourselves up by the phantom bootstraps that we don't have, you have a system that is beating you down and tell you, no, this is what we live under is the best. And we are not standing up, enough of us are not standing up with the courage to confront the system, even though sometimes it seems futile. But enough of us are not standing up.
We invest way too much energy and effort and resources that we barely have, if we have them at all. And we're asking the wrong questions. And we're doing the wrong things. It's nobody's fault that we don't have. I mean, if you are oppressed to the point of literally being choked out of life, and you still do nothing, what do you want? Whose job is it to provide a template and to at least try to enact the pillars of it, to demonstrate the validity of it? I know many communities that have their own systems. They're not depending on any government to do anything. They have articulated their plan. It's not perfect by any means, but it's pretty close to the ideal of self-governance. Right today, right in the United States, and many places across the world. The black community has got to get out of this idea that it is enough to talk about it, but do nothing. We just finished talking about preparedness. Which community can you point to, including the one you're living in, that you know is prepared to handle certain emergencies? Which one?
Disasters in this country is a hustle. Politicians and their cronies use to profit from and benefit themselves. That's what it is.
But that's not the question that we're asking. I'm saying, so problems have been identified.
Mm-hmm.
And they're serious problems that need to be rectified, because they, in the end, they turn out that they could be life-threatening. Which community can you name that has taken this question on and come up with workable plans to save the lives of people in the community should there be a problem? Which one?
It's certainly not our community.
Okay, well, I didn't ask which one not. Which community can you name that has come up with its own plan for saving lives in the event of a life-threatening disaster?
I'm sure there are quite a few communities out there that have those plans, those contingency plans. I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm just asking you, sure, but name me one.
Well, I'm sure the Jewish community, European Jewish community, have their plans.
I used to do stories. I'll give you an example. I used to do stories about the Volunteer Ambulance Corps in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The Volunteer Ambulance Corps was the gateway into the ambulance services.
Mm-hmm.
You get training, and you put through the test and so forth, and that's how many African Americans and Latinos serving as volunteers in Bed-Stuy and Williamsburg and other places, how mm-hmm. they got into that field and ended up being professionals. Well, they cut off the city, disbanded the training there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if it still exists?
I don't. But okay. I know the ambulance corps is still there.
But the point I'm saying is that this was not just training. This was the protection of a community by the people in the community. It afforded people to qualify for jobs that paid well. And it was a necessary thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a necessary thing because of the kinds of health crises that people were experiencing in that community.
Yeah.
Where has the community supported the continuance of the ambulance corps? And by the way, it was the only black corps, the only black and integrated corps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where is it?
It's still in existence, but I don't know what is happening with it, but I know it's still in existence.
Well, I would say to you that it might be in existence, but it itself
mm-hmm.
is on an emergency bed.
Mm.
Because people refuse to take charge. Now, the very same concept, was established in the Jewish community.
Mm-hmm.
And now they are the people who have been given contracts to teach the people who started it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the community uproar?
You're asking me that?
Sure.
We have had many of these. That ambulance corps, it came about out of the struggle of the brother. I forgot his name. I was just trying to find a card of his here while I'm talking to you, because I've been to fundraisers that they have had, and the brother has been to places, to our events, and I know of him. But we seem to think that when we talk about the problems that we have, the little people out in the streets are the only ones that's going to be able to solve the problems. Why then do we put elected officials in office? Why do we have the black congressional caucus?
It's all over the place. I'm asking you pointed questions. Just stay on these rails for a minute and deal with the question at hand, because that's the issue. The issue is that communities abandoned their own responsibilities
mm-hmm.
for their communities.
Mm-hmm.
And predictably, things will go wrong because mm-hmm. there's nobody there mm-hmm. to insist that these communities deserve protection, just regular citizen protection. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways they do that is you have an ambulance corps in a community, an underserved community, but it doesn't happen. People abandon these things. People don't even pay attention to them as being important. It is, you name me anybody in the community who on an ongoing basis has after-school study programs. These are your children. These are your future. The community cannot escape responsibility for what happens inside of it.
But you know, I mean, sometimes you would get some of these folks that we put our trust in and we elect to office. I wish you get some of them on your program.
It's not about electing. It's not about electing anybody to office. It's about committing to serve your community in a meaningful way. Nobody wants to do the work. Everybody wants to point a finger at who is not doing the work. Nobody is interested in doing the work. Nobody. I can't tell you how many times I've been involved in making an attempt to organize things for free. There's no charge. You and your child or children come. And we can talk about educational matters and so forth. The ambulance people were offering their services for free. And the services including teaching how to perform these services, how to use the experience to advance yourself in the field. People wouldn't come. People wouldn't come. There was a drive, I think, finally, it was... The Corps was able to buy an ambulance, and the services rendered were free. How many people contributed a dollar? So that if their child should be knocked down in the street, that same ambulance will pick them up, take them to the hospital, and begin the process of trying to get him well again. We have had so much self-contempt that we have abandoned, and we're not, in some cases, we're not even starting. We're not even trying to start something.
Hello, can I have a word, please?
Sure.
Good. Now, when we talk about power,
I want you to warn you, there are people waiting online, so we're going to have to get to the point quickly.
With Hezbollah, which is the volunteer Jewish ambulance service in Crown Heights. They have resources beyond our reach. They have the power to see that their event, their things are funded. We don't have that kind of power.
That argument is no longer valid. That argument has never been valid. About what these people the advantage that we have. That is not a valid argument.
It is a valid argument. You need to call some of these folks and bring them in so we can have a dialogue. Let them tell us where...
Dialogue is not necessary. What are you going to learn through dialogue? What you're not doing? You know that already. You know, and people in your community know what they have not been doing. Well, in fact, the big case in Crown Heights was the killing of Gavin Cato and his cousin.
He was injuring his cousin.
Right, but right there in Crown Heights, the ambulance issue was an issue because the ambulance didn't take these children to the hospital. The hot solo, ambulance didn't take them to the hospital. In your neighborhood. So a lot of the things that you've raised are valid, but I got to tell you that we have to have some bravery and confront the truth in our communities.
I've been saying that all along. That you keep picking on this.
But I have to go on because we're running out of time and we have people on the line. Thanks for calling in today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the line.
Good afternoon, Teresa. I just want to underscore what you're saying because I unfortunately was a casualty of the lack of proper emergency ambulance service. When the people who picked me up when I had an emergency didn't care anything about me, so they took me to a hospital that was totally inadequate for treating the type of case that I was. I mean, if they were really interested in me, they would have carried me to a hospital that provided the service that I needed. So what you're saying is so very important, to have a ambulance service that has the interests of its community at its heart. Two guys picked me up, not from this community, and they just didn't give a darn about where they dropped me off. So they dropped me off at a very poor hospital that couldn't do anything for me. So you're right about that. It's really important to have those community services that serve the interests of the community. What I was thinking about, I didn't listen to all of that so-called, quote-unquote, debate. But, you know, what comes to my mind is this. I feel that this is essentially a waste of time because the people who are doing this question and answer interview routine are all part of the corporations that control the media, and these people are part of the ruling class. If you want to have a real question and answer period, you need people like Harvey and Henry and me and E and various members of this seminar to be the questioners. You don't get the enemy, the ruling class that controls all the media, to put its representatives up there to talk about running for office that supposedly is for the interests of the whole people, all the people being the questioners. You know, this is ridiculous because they are limited to what they can ask because they work for the ruling class. And the point that was made also, I think, is very important. The airways belong to the people, but those in charge, those who rule, have, you know, turned them over to corporations that are in that 1%, under 1%, and that run the country. So they're not functioning in the interests of the masses of people who live here. So I think that's very important. So, you know, if we keep falling for the okey-doke and we don't understand the system and understand the game, you know, we're lost. So it's just a waste of time to think that your enemy is going to be your friend when it comes to listening to the media.
It's going to protect your interests, absolutely. Well, we have to put a plug in this right now because we've come to the end of the program. I want to thank you very much for extending yourselves. It's an intimate process of sharing your thoughts. It really is. But the fact that you so willingly do it in order that we can have a community of ideas and thought and exchanging our thoughts with each other helps to build something akin to a community, if not yet a community itself. So let's work toward that. It's the weekend. Have yourselves a very profitable weekend in the sense that you commune with people who put a positive dimension into your life. Thanks, and thanks for calling in, and we'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.